We're about to begin a fascinating series from Mark Mulcahy. Mark by day works for Sun Microsystems, but we want to emphasise as we start this series that the views he expresses and the information he imparts all come from him as an individual and do not in any way reflect the official views of the organisation for which he works.
Hi, my name is Mark Mulcahy, and today on Main Menu, I'm going to present the first of a four-part series on the GNOME desktop. Well, what is the GNOME desktop, you say? Well, the GNOME desktop is an open-source graphical user environment for various flavors of Unix. The one you're probably most familiar with is Linux, but this also includes Sun Solaris, IBM AIX, and HP UX. The best analogy that I can think of, for those of you who are familiar with it, is that this is very similar to Windows 3.1 on top of MS-DOS. In those days, you had MS-DOS running underneath, controlling all the aspects of the computer, like managing files and memory, etc., etc. And then you had Windows 3.1 running on top of MS-DOS, providing this graphical environment that was so convenient. And that's sort of how GNOME works. Underneath, you have some version of Unix, Linux, Solaris, etc., that's managing all the aspects of the computer, like files and disks and memory. And then on top of that, you have a graphical environment that makes all of that more convenient and provides additional functionality. A lot of people who currently use Unix from the command line ask questions like, well, why would I want a graphical environment for Unix? I get along fine with the command line. I learned all the options and all the switches and all that stuff, and I get along fine. And besides, I think it's faster to use the command line than it would be for a graphical environment. Well, I have a few responses to say. One is that it's much more convenient to use a graphical environment for a lot of tasks. For example, if you're looking for a file on your disk and you don't remember where it is, or you're wanting to play a music file and you're looking through your directory of music, it's much easier to search through a list in a list box than it is to try to, you know, do a directory command and then look back and see what files were listed and then have to type that name into the player, etc., etc. So I think convenience is a big one. Possibly a more important reason, though, is that the applications written for a graphical user environment tend to stay on the cutting edge of technology, whereas applications written for the command line do not. The classic example of this is the web browser under Unix, where the text-based options are fairly far behind the state-of-the-art with technology. The two main text browsers under Linux are Lynx, L-Y-N-X, and Lynx, L-I-N-K-S, and both of those are pretty far behind in things like JavaScript support, in things like macromedia support, and things like Java applet support. Whereas under the graphical user environment like GNOME, the web browser of choice is Mozilla, which has all of those features and more. So keeping up with the state of the art of technology, I think, is a huge compelling reason to take a serious look at a graphical user environment. So be that as it may, given the fact that there is this graphical user environment called GNOME, about 2.5 years ago, Sun Microsystems announced an initiative to create a GNOME accessibility project. At that time, the core of GNOME was under a big rewrite. And so Sun saw it as a prime opportunity to make the GNOME desktop accessible from the ground up. And so that was the goal of the GNOME accessibility project. The technology that the GNOME accessibility project provides is somewhat similar to Microsoft's Active Accessibility, but it has several major differences. The first and most significant is that it is much more complete. One of the prime examples of this is text support and document support within applications. Microsoft Active Accessibility never really provided a robust way for an application to let screen readers and assistive technologies know about document content. So, in other words, not just text that was on the screen, but text that has attributes within it, text that's larger than, you know, a small label or a small edit box. The GNOME accessibility framework provides very rich methods for an application to communicate to an assistive technology about its text and its document content, and for the assistive technology to modify and communicate information back to the application. A second difference, and this is somewhat of a subjective opinion, so I'll preface it by saying that, I've actually implemented both. I've implemented applications that expose their information via Active Accessibility, and I've also implemented applications that expose their accessibility information via GNOME Accessibility. And I find the latter to be much simpler. I find GNOME Accessibility to be much easier to implement, both from the side of the application that's becoming accessible and from the side of the assistive technology that's providing that accessibility information to the end user. The other interesting thing about the GNOME Accessibility infrastructure is that it supports multiple graphical toolkits. So to try to demystify that a little bit, there are several different graphical toolkits out there. Standard GNOME applications use a toolkit called GTK. That provides all kinds of graphical controls like buttons and edit boxes and list boxes and combo boxes and the like. But the two other graphical toolkits that are supported by the GNOME Accessibility Framework currently, and hopefully more will follow, are Mozilla, which is the web browser, and it provides its own graphical toolkit, as well as Java. Applications that are written in Java use their own graphical toolkit, and that is also supported by the GNOME Accessibility Framework. So a screen reader or an assistive technology that's written to take advantage of GNOME Accessibility gets any other toolkits that support it for free. So if you write an assistive technology that supports the GNOME Accessibility Framework, then you don't have to make any changes to your screen reader or your assistive technology, and you will automatically work with any other toolkits that support it. For example, currently Mozilla and Java. Another very significant advantage is that the GNOME Accessibility Framework is completely open source, as is the entire GNOME desktop. While this may seem like a philosophical difference, it has some very interesting implications. Because the Accessibility Framework is open source, anyone with technical knowledge can help fix bugs in the accessibility infrastructure. Because the screen reader and screen magnifier are open source, anybody with technical know-how can fix bugs in the screen reader. No longer does a blind person who has technical knowledge have to wait on the screen reader manufacturer to fix bugs. Likewise, no longer is a commercial vendor of an application the only one who can fix that application in regards to accessibility. If a GNOME application is found to be inaccessible, anybody within the community who knows how to write code can go into that application and make it accessible. As a side note, I've actually done this. A couple of years ago, I sat down to use the GNOME volume control, kind of like the volume control in Windows, it's a mixer application, and I discovered that all the sliders had no labels, and so it was virtually impossible to use because you didn't know what you were controlling. And so I sat down on a Sunday morning and went into the code and made the GNOME volume control accessible by adding labels and hooking it up to the GNOME accessibility infrastructure. So those are some of the differences between what has existed under Windows and what currently exists under the GNOME Accessibility Framework. The GNOME Accessibility Project includes the framework that I just talked about, as well as an open source screen reader and magnifier called Gnopernicus, and an on-screen keyboard, which allows a person who can't use a mouse or the keyboard to use a pointing device, like a head-mounted pointing device or a single switch device, to type on a virtual keyboard that's on screen or to select options that would normally be selected by a mouse. So that is an idea of what GNOME is and what the GNOME desktop is and what the GNOME Accessibility Project is. And now to give you a quick overview, where are we going in this series? This week, we'll take a look at Gnopernicus. We'll go through its dialogues, we'll look at some of the options and some of the settings, give you an idea of what sorts of things you can control using Gnopernicus. Next week, we'll take a look at the GNOME panel. It's kind of like the Windows desktop, except cooler. And we'll also take a look at the GNOME Control Center, kind of like the Windows Control Panel. It lets you customize how your GNOME desktop behaves. The week after that, we'll take a look at some various GNOME utilities, including gEdit, which is the equivalent of Windows Notepad, allows you to edit and save text documents. And the last week of the series, we'll take a look at Mozilla, which is the graphical web browser supported under the GNOME desktop, and we'll take a look at running Java applications on the GNOME desktop. Before we dive into Gnopernicus, I wanted to make a point about the purpose of this series. The purpose of this series is not to give you all the technical information you'll need to install and play with GNOME on your system, because I think that will bog us down in details that won't be of general interest. So my purpose in producing this series is to give you a bird's eye view of what GNOME is like using GNOPernicus. Okay, I think that's enough intro material for now. I'm going to take you into GNOPernicus, and I'll walk you through the various settings dialogs, and we'll see what various aspects of GNOPernicus we can control. For this demonstration, I'll be using IBM VoiceVoice for Linux. It's basically the same as Eloquence for Windows, so the speech should be relatively familiar to most of you. So I'm going to launch GNOPernicus now.
Welcome to GNOPernicus.
So I'll take you through the GNOPernicus dialog. I'll be using the tab key to move between the various buttons in the dialog.
One, general settings. Push button shortcut Alt 1.
Okay, so what we heard is the name of the item, the role of it, which is a push button, and the shortcut, which is Alt 1, which I can push to go right to it.
Two, input slash output settings. Push button shortcut Alt 2. Three, configure. Push button shortcut Alt 3. Four, load default settings. Push button shortcut Alt 4. Five, help. Push button shortcut Alt 5, 6 about. Push button shortcut Alt 6, 7 minimize menu. Push button shortcut Alt 7, exit. Push button shortcut Alt X, 1 general settings. Push button shortcut Alt 1.
Okay, so we're back to the beginning. I'll take you into the general settings dialog by pushing the space bar to click this button.
Create window. General settings, OK, push button shortcut Alt O.
Okay, we're on the OK button. I'll tab through.
Braille. Checkbox unchecked.
I can turn Braille support on or off. There are a few displays that are supported. The display that I'm working with right now, which is the Braille Light 40, is not supported.
Magnifier. Checkbox unchecked.
The magnifier is currently turned off. You can turn that on to get screen magnification. There are still a few issues to be worked out, and obviously it wouldn't be a very interesting review to talk about the magnifier in audio, so we won't deal with that.
Speech. Checkbox checked.
Okay, speech is currently on. That's a checkbox. It's checked.
Braille monitor. Checkbox unchecked.
The Braille monitor is a little window that will show up in the bottom of your screen and will show what would currently be being displayed on the Braille display. We don't have that currently running either.
Start GNOPernicus minimized. Checkbox shortcut Alt S unchecked.
Okay, this is allows you to start GNOPernicus minimized so that the configuration dialog is not full-sized.
Help. Push button shortcut Alt H. Cancel. Push button shortcut Alt C, apply. Push button shortcut Alt A, OK. Push button shortcut Alt O.
Okay, so that's all the options in the general dialog. I'll click OK and it'll take us back to the GNOPernicus main dialog.
Destroy window. General settings, 1 general settings, push button shortcut Alt 1. 2 input slash output settings. Push button shortcut Alt 2.
Okay, so here we are in the input output settings. I'll click this and we'll see what's in here.
Create window. I slash O settings, close push button shortcut Alt C. 1 speech settings. Push button shortcut Alt 1. 4 keyboard settings. Push button shortcut Alt 4. Close. Push button shortcut Alt C. 1 speech settings. Push button shortcut Alt 1.
Okay, so all we have are speech and keyboard settings because we don't have Braille or the magnifier active. If we did, we would get a couple other buttons in this dialog to set up Braille and magnification. So I'll click on the speech button and we'll see what's in here.
Create window. Speech settings, OK, push button shortcut Alt O. Same. Radio button checked.
Okay, so we've entered the speech settings dialog and found a group of radio buttons for which GNOPernicus is not reading the label. So this is, I think, as appropriate a time as any to demonstrate the review modes in GNOPernicus and show you a little bit of how they work and how to use them. This is actually, by the way, a GNOPernicus bug. It should have labeled the group of radio buttons, but be that as it may, it makes for a good exercise. There are two review modes in GNOPernicus. One is called flat review mode. This is basically a review mode in which you traverse the window like you would with the JAWS cursor or the WindowEyes cursor. The other mode is called focus tracking mode, sometimes also called hierarchical review mode. It allows you to review the objects in an application in a hierarchical fashion. Right now, we are on the same radio button, and we'll use this hierarchical review mode to find the label for this box of radio buttons. Both review modes use the numeric keypad to control them. So in hierarchical review mode, to move to the parent object, or the object that contains the current object, you push 8. to move to the first child of the current object, in other words, the first object within the current object, you push 2. To move to the previous object at the current level, you push 4. To move to the next object at the current level, you push 6. And to repeat the current object, you push 5, which I'll do now.
Same. Radio button checked.
So we're on the same object. What the heck is this radio button that we're dealing with? So I'm going to move up a level. I'm going to go to the parent object of this radio button, because obviously it's going to be a group box of some sort.
VBOX8. Filler.
Okay, it's called VBOX8. It's a filler object. It's basically a group box. So maybe the label is to the left. So I'll push the previous object button, which is 4.
No previous.
And it says no previous. So maybe it's to the right. So I'll push the 6 button.
Punctuation. Label.
Ah, and there we are. It's a label. It says punctuation. If I push 6 again,
no next.
It says no next. So that means that we found the label for this group box. And so the options here are same as we said.
Most. Radio button checked. All. Radio button checked. Ignore. Radio button checked. Same. Radio button checked. Most. Radio button checked.
I'm just going to walk you through this dialog because most of the other options in here are pretty self-explanatory.
Count characters. Checkbox unchecked. Say all modifiers. Checkbox unchecked. Say all cursors. Checkbox unchecked. Say all spaces. Checkbox checked. Character. Radio button checked.
Okay, we found another group of radio buttons for which it's not reading the label, so we'll try the same approach we tried last time. We'll go to the parent object and push the next object button and see if that finds it for us.
VBOX27. Filler. Text echo. Label.
Okay, there it is. So this is the text echo setting, and it's currently set to...
Character. Radio button
currently
checked.
Set to character. The choices are...
Word. Radio button checked. Character. Radio button checked.
Okay, so let's leave it on character.
Voice settings, voices. Push button shortcut Alt V.
Okay, this allows us to change all kinds of voice settings. I will take you into this dialog and forewarn you that it's very complicated, and this is one of the bugs that is currently filed against Copernicus, is that this whole process of changing voices needs to be made simpler. So I'm going to click on this button, and we'll get into the voices dialog and see what's in here.
Create window. Voice settings, OK, push button, shortcut, Alt-O. Table columns header.
Okay, this is the header for table columns. It actually is focusable for some reason.
Table line. 5 items, accelerator V0, adult male 1, IBM Viavis Gnome speech driver 18065.
Okay, deluge of information there. What we're walking through now is what would be in Windows either a tree view or a list view. In GNOME, it's called kind of one control, but it's a table. And this is a list of all the different voices that you can configure within Copernicus. So what we have here is, we heard that it was an accelerator, we heard it was voice zero, something about IBM via voice, and then some numbers. Basically, each voice has a name, and there are several of them, and basically what this lets you do is set up different voices to read accelerators, to read the names of objects, to read the roles of objects, etc., etc. So I am actually going to go down to one that will be more noticeable, and it will be the name voice. So I'm just pushing down arrow, moving through the rows of this table.
Table line. 5 items, child count V0, adult male 1, IBM Viavis Gnome speech driver 16575.
Okay.
Table line. 5 items, location V0, table line. 5 items, message V0, table line. 5 items, name V0, adult male 1, IBM Viavis Gnome speech driver 16575.
Okay, so we're going to configure the name voice. This is the voice that's used to read the names of things in Copernicus, so I'm going to push tab.
Voices list add. Push button shortcut Alt A.
Okay, this allows me to add a voice to this list, which I don't really want to do at this point.
Voices list modify. Push button shortcut Alt M.
Okay, this will let me modify this voice, so I'm going to push this button, and it'll take us into another dialog, and we can set this voice to whatever we want.
Create window. Add slash modify voice, OK, push button shortcut Alt O. CB underscore engine underscore voice. Combo box V0 adult male 1, IBM Viavis Gnome speech driver.
Okay, so we've heard now that this is the IBM via voice driver. This allows me to change what voice I want to use for various aspects of what gets read by Copernicus. I'm not going to do this, but I'll just take you through this dialog and show you what you can change.
HS underscore voice underscore volume. Slider current value 100.
Okay, this is the volume of the voice. Current value is percentages, so it's 100%. This is a slider. It doesn't appear to be controllable via the keyboard. If you push the arrows, the slider isn't controllable, but coming up next, we have the spin button for the same control.
Properties. Spin button current value 100.
And by pushing down arrow,
87.
I can move the value down. Pushing up arrow, I can move it up. Page down.
88. 78.
Moves it down by 10.
88.
Page up, conversely, moves it up by 10.
100.
So that's how you control those settings.
HS underscore voice underscore rate. Slider current value 65.
Okay, here's the value for rate. Currently set at 65, and then the spin button.
Spin button current value 65.
For the same control. And then we also have settings for pitch.
HS underscore voice underscore pitch. Slider current value 75. Volume. Spin button current value 75.
The spin buttons are... The labels for the spin buttons are being misread.
Cancel. Push button short OK. Push button shortcut Alt O.
So that's what's in the dialog that allows you to modify each individual voice in Copernicus. I'm going to close this dialog and go back to the main voices dialog.
@modify voice voices list modify push button shortcut Alt M.
I'm going to tab to the OK button.
Voices list remove. Test. Push button.
Oh, I guess I should show you the test button. Will allow you to see what each voice sounds like.
Voice name will sound this way.
And
help. Push button cancel. Apply. Push OK.
There
push button, shortcut,
is the OK button, so we'll click it.
Switch to window. Speech settings, voice settings, voices, push button, shortcut, Alt V.
Okay, so we're back to the speech settings dialog. The only other option in this dialog is...
Use dictionary. Checkbox unchecked.
Allows us to use a pronunciation dictionary.
Help. Push button, shortcut, Alt H. Cancel. Push button, shortcut, Alt C. Apply. Push button, shortcut, Alt A. OK. Push button, shortcut, Alt O.
Okay, so we're back to the... OK button, we'll click it, and it will take us back to the input-output settings dialog.
Destroy window. Speech settings 1, speech settings, push button, shortcut, Alt 1. 4 keyboard settings, push
and
button, shortcut, Alt 4.
We'll take a look now at the keyboard settings dialog. I'll click this button.
Create window. Keyboard settings, OK, push button, shortcut, Alt O. Take mouse at current object. Checkbox, shortcut, Alt T, unchecked.
Okay, this allows you to have the mouse track where you're currently working.
Help. Push button shortcut Alt H. Cancel. Push button shortcut Alt C. OK. Push button shortcut Alt O.
And that's the only option in that dialog box.
Destroy window. Keyboard settings 4. Keyboard settings. Push button shortcut Alt 4. Close. Push button shortcut Alt C.
Okay, so we'll click close on this dialog.
Destroy window. /O settings 2 input / output settings. Push button shortcut Alt 2. 3 configure. Push button shortcut Alt 3.
Okay, we'll click on the configure option, which is the next one in the Copernicus main dialog.
Create window. Configure close push button shortcut 1 command mapping. Push button shortcut Alt 1.
Okay, this is the command mapping dialog. Let's see what's in here.
Create table columns header. Layers. Page tab.
Okay, this is a multi-tab dialog, and we're on a tab control. And the way that you switch between tabs is the same way that you would in Windows with left and right arrow. So we'll push right arrow, see what other tabs are in this dialog.
User defined. Page tab.
I don't know if you heard that, but when I push the right arrow at the end of the tab list, my PC speaker beeps. So there are only two tabs here, and when I push left arrow...
Layers. Page tab.
I'm back on layers, and when I push it again... It beeps again because there's only two tabs. Kind of a nice feature. So on the Layers tab, we'll tab through. I'll push the tab key now.
Table columns header.
There is the header column.
Table line. Two items, LAYER00KEY01 list go to toolbar grant.
Okay, so this is a table showing the various key assignments. I should say that the way the Copernicus numeric keypad is arranged is in what's called layers. So the way they work this out is that the keypad has 9 different layers, or I would call them modes, that you can put it in. Layer 0 is the sort of review mode that we were playing with earlier in the speech settings dialog. We're seeing references to key assignments for particular layers.
Table line. Two items, LAYER00KEY01 list go to toolbar grant.
Okay, so what we see is on layer 0, the current assignment is that if you push the 1 on the keypad, you will hear the toolbar. So if I do it now...
No toolbar.
There's no toolbar in this particular application. And then you can obviously modify these and set these to whatever you want.
Remove. Push button modify. Push button add. Push button shortcut Alt A. Help. Push button shortcut Alt H. Cancel. Push button shortcut Alt C. Apply. Push button shortcut Alt A. OK. Push button shortcut Alt O.
Okay, so this allows you to basically set up and customize your keyboard however you want to. Okay, so I clicked OK.
One command mapping. Push button shortcut Alt 1.
And we're back to the configure dialog, and we just did command mapping, so we'll tab.
2 presentation. Push button shortcut Alt 2.
Now, the presentation basically allows you to configure what order things are spoken in, or how they are brailled on your braille display. It's a very confusing dialog in my estimation, but I'll take you through it, and we'll see how it works. I'm not going to spend a lot of time here, but we'll open it up and see what's inside.
Create window. Presentation OK. Push button shortcut Alt O. Table columns header. Table line. 4 items braille link generic percent role percent percent text colon luna percent.
Okay, so the incoherent text that we just heard with a bunch of percent signs in it is the reason that I don't really want to go into this dialogue in too much detail, but I'll basically just describe to you what it's doing. Basically, what we're describing here in this dialogue is how Copernicus should respond to various events in both Braille and speech. So, for example, when an object gets the focus, what should be brailled and what should be spoken is defined in this dialogue. And it's defined using a markup, which is why all those percents are there. It's something you can configure yourself if you can figure out how to understand and interpret the markup.
Presentation order add. Push button shortcut Alt A.
Okay, so this allows us to add a presentation rule.
Presentation order modify. Push button.
This allows us to modify a rule.
Presentation order remove. Push button shortcut Alt R.
Okay, this allows us to remove a rule.
Help. Push button shortcut Alt H. Cancel. Push button shortcut Alt C. Apply. Push button shortcut Alt A. OK. Push button shortcut Alt O.
OK, I'll click the OK button and it'll take us back to the configure dialog.
Destroy window. Presentation 2 presentation. Push button shortcut Alt 2. 3 screen review settings. Push button shortcut Alt 3.
OK, so this is the screen review settings. The dialog is unclear to me. There's not real good documentation on how to use it, so I'm not going to take you through it because I don't understand it real well myself.
4 find. Push button shortcut Alt 4.
So that allows you to find text in a given application or window. Okay, I'm going to click close and it'll take us back to the Copernicus dialog.
Destroy window. Configure 3. Configure push button shortcut Alt 3.
So that's going to do it for a demonstration of the Copernicus dialogs and all the configuration options. If you're interested in more information about GNOME, or you want to get involved in testing or developing GNOME, or just want more information about GNOME accessibility, you might want to get a writing utensil ready, because I will give you some contact information and web addresses here in just a second that you might want to write down. Next week, here on the GNOME tutorial on Main Menu, we'll be taking a look at the GNOME panel, which is the equivalent of the Windows desktop, except it's a bit cooler because it allows you to have actually running applications that are called applets on your panel. And we'll also take a look at GNOME Control Center, which is the equivalent of the control panel. It lets you configure your GNOME desktop to your liking. We'll take you through the dialogues and various options there. Some contact information that you might want. The general GNOME website is at www.gnome.org. If you're interested in getting involved in developing GNOME software, the address to get started there is developer.gnome.org. If you'd like more information about Copernicus, the web address to go to is www.baum.ro. That's www.baum.ro/gnopernicus.html, gnopernicus.html. There are also two email lists that you may wish to join to stay up to date with GNOME accessibility. The first is called GNOME-accessibility and focuses on general GNOME-related accessibility discussions. To subscribe to that list, point your web browser to mail.gnome.org/mailman/listinfo, listinfo, /gnome-accessibility-list. The second list is called gnome-accessibility-devel. It's much more technical in nature. It would be more appropriate for those of you with technical knowledge who may be interested in GNOME accessibility from a software development point of view. It's the place where we discuss progress on the assistive technologies and other GNOME-related technical discussions. To subscribe to that list, point your web browser to mail.gnome.org/mailman/listinfo/gnome-accessibility-devel. I would love to get your feedback on this first part of the series, as well as comments and criticisms as to how I can make the next three even better. My email address to send comments and feedback is mark, M-A-R-C, @acbradio.org. Thanks for listening.